Hello, and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to continue our series on theologies and conflict. Now, over the past several weeks, we've been discussing the fact that in America today, there are two major religions, Christianity and progressivism. These two religions are not only competing, but incompatible. They cannot both survive, and they cannot tolerate each other because both worldviews are totalizing. Now, let me unpack that statement. Now, there are some beliefs that you can hold that have little or no impact on other things you believe. For instance, you can believe there is a Loch Ness Monster, and it is very possible that your belief in the Loch Ness Monster has literally no bearing on anything else you want to believe. It can't be used to predict any other beliefs you have. If you believe in the Loch Ness Monster, I can't use that to guess whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. It doesn't tell me your opinion on abortion or gay marriage. It doesn't tell me whether or not you support the Green New Deal. It gives me no hint as to whether you think the Versailles Treaty was fair to the Germans. Your belief in Nessie has low diagnosticity. That means that as a diagnostic tool, it's useless. You can't diagnose or predict other beliefs you've had based upon your belief in the Scottish Lake Monster. So, some views and opinions and beliefs don't interfere with other beliefs. I can think that Sonic is orders of magnitude better than McDonald's, and it doesn't affect any other thought I have, unless it's specifically related to whether or not I want a delicious, juicy burger from Sonic, and I do, but that's irrelevant. It just means I need to stop recording these, you know, when I'm hungry. Belief in the Loch Ness Monster or admitting the truth of the superiority of Sonic is a view. However, some views do impact other beliefs. If you believe that all humans are endowed by their creator with inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that these rights cannot be infringed without due process of law, then yes, that will have a huge impact on other beliefs. Even if you're inconsistent or a bit hypocritical at times, your faith in the Constitution's description of basic human rights is going to affect a lot of things. Beliefs that affect lots and lots of other beliefs are called worldviews. They are attempts to make sense of the specific problems or phenomena in the world through one or several guiding principles. These are called worldviews. Then there's a special category of worldviews. These worldviews not only attempt to make sense of the world through guiding principles, but they claim to answer all questions. These are meta-narratives. These, as one writer has put it, subsume all paradigmata under its own paradigm. Okay, that's a lot of $5 theology words. Let's break it down. The special category of worldviews doesn't accept that there is anything that the worldview cannot explain, incorporate, or refute. All knowledge and truth is incorporated into the system. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, atheism, scientific materialism, communism, and of course, progressivism, these are all worldviews that attempt to explain everything. True believers would tell you that there is nothing that these systems cannot explain, incorporate, or refute. All knowledge, all data, all phenomena, all truth, every human behavior, every paradigm, every narrative, everything can be accounted for by the system and accounted for exclusively. These are totalizing worldviews. Now, as you can expect, totalizing worldviews are exclusivist and by nature very intolerant. Understand, when I say intolerant, I don't mean that that's a bad thing. Intolerant is not a pejorative. Indeed, sometimes intolerance can be a very good thing. If you swallow a bunch of poison, you ought to want your body to be intolerant of the poison and to vomit it out. If you get a virus or bacterial infection, you want your immune system to be intolerant of that disease. We have a name for diseases that prevent your immune system from fighting off diseases. A disease that effectively prevents your body from being intolerant, we call them immunodeficiency diseases. AIDS is an example. When your body's immune system becomes tolerant of the wrong things, that's bad. However, when your body's immune system is intolerant of the wrong things, then that, of course, is also bad. These are autoimmune disorders. Things like arthritis and lupus are autoimmune diseases. But so are forms of myocarditis, and autoimmune disorders can be fatal and can cause cytokine storms. The problem isn't tolerance or intolerance per se. The question is whether you're tolerant and intolerant of the right things. A totalizing worldview is intolerant of contradictions. And if the worldview is correct, it should be intolerant. Now, I spent all this time making this point because I want us all to be on the same page. 2 weeks ago, I laid out the case that the division in this country is not primarily political, but theological. It's a division not between left and right, but between progressive utopians and Christians. Last week, I showed that progressive utopianism is a religion and a religion incompatible with Christianity. And so far today, we've added some new vocab, maybe some new thought concepts to our theological toolbox. It isn't simply that Christianity and progressive utopianism are in conflict, and it isn't simply that they're incompatible religions, though those things are true enough. But not only are Christianity and progressivism conflicting incompatible religions, they are both totalizing worldviews, which means that they will both try to completely defeat and evict the other from the marketplace of ideas. Neither can tolerate the other. Christianity is allergic to progressive utopianism, and utopian progressivism is allergic to Christianity. They cannot both share the public square in a single polity forever. They are incompatible. A nation cannot be both Christian and progressive utopianism. It doesn't work. They have conflicting aims, conflicting moral systems, conflicting views of man, conflicting conceptions of the good, and they are in total conflict. And if those are the only two options, then a society cannot be both. At least not forever. Right now, our nation is a kind of Frankenstein's monster, Christian in its founding and heritage, and our institutions and systems are all Christian in orientation, but the overt and even implied Christian ideals and morals and influence is bit by bit being replaced with progressive alternatives. Consider marriage. Marriage in this country came from the Christian ideas of marriage taken from Europe, but progressivism has been undermining marriage for well over a century. First with Darwinism and feminism and modernism, and then with second and third wave feminism and the 60s counterculture and the sexual revolution and no-fault divorce and legalized abortion and now homosexual marriage and the dissolution of marriage is so vast that numbers of people are not going to get married, and now huge percentages of millennials and Gen Zers have no interest in getting married or having children. Marriage has been eroded through cultural and legal means so that it's a hollow shell of its former self as far as social institutions go. And that's not an accident. It is not accidental that marriage has been eroded since the rise of progressivism. Communist Russia talked about abolishing marriage. We see the anti-marriage policies and cultural moves in the U.S., marriage is only tolerated as a proxy for child rearing. In fascist states, marriage was promoted because it meant children, and you need children if you're going to conquer the world. But marriage would be jettisoned if possible. Why? Because marriage creates a bond that supersedes one's loyalty to the state. Now, that's not to say that progressives themselves, in their own personal lives, don't like marriage. Many of them have married well and are happy with their 1.7 children and their large nest egg. They, on a personal level, see the benefits of marriage. But marriage for utopian secular humanist totalitarians is not a beneficial social institution if your primary goal is to have a subservient population. Unfortunately, children born outside of stable marriages have a very high rate of criminality, so it's a bit of a double-edged sword. You can't get rid of marriage without having a population of uncontrollable hellions. But you can't keep marriage and have everyone worship the state. Similarly, after the Communist Revolution in the Russian Empire, Lenin, Stalin, and all the communist bigwigs had to legalize, tolerate, and actually promote capitalism because it was the only way for the country to get wealthy enough to get rid of capitalism. The new economic policy meant that the only way to get rid of capitalism was with more capitalism. And that points out the underlying folly of every aspect of the progressive utopian project. It's all contrary to reality. It has a faith-based and dogmatic and entirely incorrect view of human nature. And because its anthropology is inherently, unchangeably, and unavoidably wrong, its policies always fail in the long run. You can't create policies that succeed with humans if your anthropology is totally wrong. Unless, of course, your goal isn't actually to gain utopia, but just to have dictatorial power. And of course, we see this clearly in 1984. O'Brien asks a naive Winston why they really want power. Why does the party really want power? What's their actual goal? And this exchange happens. Winston said, "You were ruling over us for our own good," he said feebly. "You believe that human beings are not fit to govern themselves, and therefore..." "That was stupid, Winston, stupid," he said. "You should know better than to say a thing like that. Now I will tell you the answer to my question. It is this. The party seeks power entirely for its own sake. We are not interested in the good of others. We are interested solely in power, not wealth or luxury or long life or happiness, only power, pure power. What pure power means, you will understand presently. We are different from all the oligarchies of the past in that we know what we're doing. All the others, even those who resembled ourselves, were cowards and hypocrites. The German Nazis and the Russian communists came very close to us in their methods, but they never had the courage to recognize their own motives. They pretended, perhaps even believed, that they had seized power unwillingly and for a limited time, and that just round the corner there lay a paradise where human beings would be free and equal. We are not like that. We know that no one ever seizes power with the intention of relinquishing it. Power is not a means, it is an end. One does not establish a dictatorship in order to safeguard a revolution. One makes the revolution in order to establish the dictatorship. The object of persecution is persecution. The object of torture is torture. The object of power is power. Now do you begin to understand me? The point O'Brien makes is that it doesn't matter to the totalitarian if his projects don't work. It doesn't matter that the economic systems they implement fail. It doesn't matter that the utopia never comes. Achieving utopia is not the purpose of utopianism. According to O'Brien, the purpose of utopianism is power for those in charge of creating the utopia. Progressivist utopianism fails everywhere it's tried. It cannot bring in the utopia because it is fundamentally wrong about what human flourishing is, and therefore it is fundamentally wrong about how to achieve it. The totalizing worldview of progressive utopianism is a complete and utter failure, if its purpose is to create a utopia. But if its purpose is to justify and secure power for the elites, then it is eminently and incontrovertibly successful. If, more specifically, its goal is to overthrow Christianity as the dominant cultural worldview, then it has been very successful heretofore. It is likely to win the day unless God intervenes. But here's the thing. There are only two kinds of progressive utopians, the useful idiots who believe the rhetoric and the evil people who don't. Indeed, there are a lot of utopians who have convinced themselves that progressivism is the way to create paradise on Earth. They sincerely believe this. It's a stupid idea, and they are either self-deceived or willfully blind, or so arrogant that they can believe something demonstrably false. Human beings can sincerely believe a lie. Sinners can indeed convince themselves of something they know to be a lie. The Bible calls this suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. But there are true believers. There are true believers in progressive utopianism. But apart from them are the cynics who, with eyes wide open, reject the living God and try to overthrow him. That's all there is to it. At the root of it all is a rejection of God's vision for the world and his revealed truth about humanity and his diagnosis and cure for the human condition. Progressive utopianism is the big lie that people swallow to give them an excuse to reject Christ. At least it's the one on offer today. Every culture and every generation has at least one great lie to offer. Every culture and every generation has some excuse to hate God and continue in humanity's disordered loves. And the most tragic and shocking thing is that so many do this knowingly. They know, even if not consciously, they know that they're looking for an excuse to reject Christ. And they know, even if not consciously, they know that their lie is a lie and it cannot work. But they persist in their lies. I've thought long and hard about why. This question fascinates me. Why do people persist in self-destructive behavior? Why do people reject God knowing that it will mean misery? I've spent a long time thinking and pondering this. But in the end, I don't think anyone has said it better than Milton in Paradise Lost. Satan says that it is better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. There are people, multitudes of people, who hate God and they hate him knowingly, knowing that it will mean an eternity in misery. Their loves are directed destructively towards themselves. And they know it and they persist in doing evil. They persist in rejecting Christ and loving what is wrong. Why? Because they would rather love themselves in hell than love God in heaven. They would rather be narcissists in misery than worshipers in joy. The progressive utopian project cannot abide Christianity because its whole purpose is to replace Christianity. It's an excuse to hate God. That's all it ever was and all it ever will be. It's just one more lie that'll end up on the rubbish heap of history. Sadly, not without wrecking and ruining the lives and eternities of countless millions. But it too shall pass. Because it's a lie. And no lie can last forever when God is truth. No lie can last forever when God is truth. God is truth, and someday the empires of the world will be crushed and ground to powder by the rock that becomes a mountain. Someday all the world's empires will drift away as powder in a storm, but God will remain, and his kingdom will endure forever. Next time, we will discuss how Christians ought to respond to progressivism. So I hope you'll join us then for another exciting episode of Truth in Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.